morning. It is time to get up with the madness of March. The men march on to Phoenix while the biggest star gets to shine on April 1st. Meanwhile, oh, LeBron, did you see what he did last night? Holy smoke, if you didn't, you aren't going to believe it, and you need to hear what he said afterwards. And then, it is draft month. Let's do this thing, people. We've got the five biggest questions that will be answered by the time we touch the calendar again. All that, a whole lot more. It's time to get going. It is Get Up. We are presented by ESPN Bet, and we are ready to roll on a Monday morning. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Squad is in effect. Graziano's ready to go. Jay Will's breaking down brackets. The big fella, Damian Woody, loved what he saw in the college.
That's my DJ.
That's his guy. Plus, of course, we've got all the women's game covered tonight with the huge matchups. We got Uncle Seth Greenberg, no relation, with us this morning. So much to do. Let's get this started. Jay Will, let's talk about that man. NC State looking to put together one of the great runs we've ever seen in the history of this tournament. Taking on Duke for the third time in a month. Second half, they just took the game over.
Yeah, both DJs, DJ Horn and DJ Burns down low. Just look at the ballerina-like footwork. Loves going over that right shoulder with the baby. Yeah, cradle him, rock the baby, put the baby to sleep.
Everybody's too small against DJ Burns, but they got contributions everywhere. Michael O'Connell with a three.
Yeah, they were able to span out in transition. And look, it's one of the things Duke had a lead in the first half, but you felt like NC State was really imposing their will in the second.
Right. It was especially DJ Burns. You want to talk about imposing. He would score 29. Look at him here in the front of the pack. 29 for Burns. How about his dad? Loved it yesterday. A star is born in college basketball, and Duke goes down. NC State. They lost 14 games in the regular season. That's the most by any team to reach a Final Four in NCAA tournament history. They needed a miracle banked-in three at the end of regulation to send an ACC tournament game against Virginia into overtime. Otherwise, their season ends there. And here's Uncle Seth. It's just amazing how these things work. Your season is an eye blink away from being over 3 weeks ago, and instead, they are putting together one of the great Magic Carpet rides that we have ever seen. Talk to me about this, DJ Burns, because I think America is going nuts.
Going nuts, but this is a little bit of Jimmy V. They didn't think we had a chance. You know, in 83, it looked a lot like it does in 2024, but DJ Burns is impossible to defend. I mean, he's a wide body, carves out space, great footwork, terrific passer out of double teams. Absolutely impossible to game plan for, but you have to do something. To me, I was disappointed in Duke and the inability to maybe give him a different look. Show some coaching agility. What I mean by that, if he's absolutely burying you on the block, you've got to double him. You've got to run a second defender at him. Then you've got to force him to be a passer. I know he's a great passer. But when that thing gets thrown out, you can then rotate and force an extra pass and force a contested three. Choice was made to play him man-to-man. You know what? You cannot guard that guy one-on-one. He absolutely dominates the paint.
And Filipowski fouls out of the game and has a really tough night. Ryan Young can't handle a kid that big. NC State, how about Duke? I mean, this looked like halftime, I was as convinced as I could be that Duke was going to win that game. Yeah,
because they weren't playing well, and they still had a lead. I'm surprised Sean Stewart didn't play a lot more minutes in this ball game. That's what he played out against NC State. That's what helped him the first time around. I agree with Seth on the multitude of looks. I thought they would have given him some zone, given him some different matchups, even though he is a good passer. The thing that's hard about this, though, is that if you're John Shire or if you're a Duke or a fellow alumni, there's not too many times that the basketball gods are going to give you an easier path to the Final Four. Okay? You played against Vermont. You played against JMU. You played against Houston with Jamal Shedd. The heart and soul of that team being out early in the game, not coming back. And then you get an 11th seed in the tournament for a chance in Elite Eight to get to the Final Four. But that's how the ball bounces, man. And DJ Burns is America's big man.
Yeah.
This dude is like, he has Shaq's personality. And by the way, watching him against Zach Edey, it's going to be like twins with Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yet add 10 inches to them both. That's what it's going to be like.
You want to talk about a clash of the Titans. We'll have all week to set that thing up. But Purdue and NC State figures to be the two big men, and we'll see where it goes from there. In the meantime, I have been calling this thing the UConn Invitational. And Uncle Seth, you and I have been talking about it. I mean, what they did, Seth and I, as we were getting his microphone ready, we're just chatting. I haven't seen a lot of 30 to nothing runs in my 50 years of watching basketball, Seth, and I don't know how many times you've seen it. How do you describe what we saw UConn do to an excellent Illinois team on Saturday night?
It was dominating. You know, Greeny, I might have seen a couple 30-0 runs, but maybe they were against my team. That's why I'm hanging out talking to you. It was dominating on both sides of the floor. I mean, you know, Donovan Klingon took over this game. Danny Hurley decided to put Donovan Klingon on Ty Rogers. He played in the middle of the rim, blocked everything. They got out in transition. The pieces just fit. This is the most dominating team in recent years of college basketball. You've had great teams. Jay Will, you played on a great team. The Florida back-to-back teams were great teams. You've seen teams win back-to-back championships, but not in the manner in which this team plays. The closest thing I can remember is the UNLV teams that didn't win back-to-back championships
right.
that I had a chance to play against when I was at Long Beach State. But they dominate you offensively, defensively, collectively. They share the basketball. It's absolutely a clinic.
Yeah, the UNLV teams he's talking about, you're talking two generations ago. That's Larry Johnson and Stacey Augman and all of those
but
guys.
But also that Florida team had the same cast of characters. These are two different casts of
completely
characters.
Completely different teams.
It's unbelievable what we're saying.
So again, you were on that Duke team. Like, finish this sentence. What we're watching right now from this UConn team, they are the best team we've seen since who?
I don't know, Greeny.
You guys have beat them?
I think we would have given them. Yeah, I think we would have.
Different era.
But still, we're comparing different generations, and what they're doing to their contemporaries is mind-boggling to me, right? Like, I think the only word to describe Danny Hurley and UConn right now is dynastic. Like, it's turning into that. And I will say this, as much as I want to see the story of the Cinderella, I know they say they're not a Cinderella, as an 11 seed NC State, get to a championship where I love Nate Oates. We have three high school coaches in the Final Four right now, Kevin Keats, Nate Oates, Dan Hurley at St. Benedict's, what they've been able to do. It does feel like the only team who has a legitimate chance to beat UConn is Purdue because of Zach Edey. Like, he's the one guy that feels like he's a walking force that can actually impose his will against the likes of Donovan Klingon or Sampson. But still, you're still going to give the advantage to UConn because of how their guards defend against the likes of Fletcher Lawyer and also Braden Smith.
If you play them within double digits, it feels like a moral victory. They're so head and shoulders above the rest of the field.
Do you disagree with me on that comment?
No, you're
shaking your head.
I think the only team that has a chance is Alabama because the style of play. Can they impose their identity on the game? Make 18 threes. Okay. That's the only team that has a shot at them.
I'm old enough to remember when people were saying the only team that might beat them is Illinois. And then 30 to nothing later,
40 to nothing
not so much. Nobody's going to beat them. Listen, I got in a lot of trouble last week by saying they were just too good for everybody else. So don't make me go there again. In the meantime, that's the men's side of this. The women's Final Four is halfway set. Two teams already on their way to Cleveland. NC State, how about the year there? They took down Texas, South Carolina, best team in the country from start to finish. They continue their dominance. So those two in the Final Four. Tonight, we'll see the 3-seed UConn taking on the 1-seed USC, a matchup of two of the best players in the country, UConn's Paige Beckers and USC's Juju Watkins. And then the other game, of course, a rematch of last year's national title game. LSU, the defending champs, taking on Caitlin Clark and Iowa in what will be the 8th championship game rematch in the NCAA tournament to come the following year. Caitlin Clark, I mean, where do you begin? She's had quite the career in the tournament. She scored 400 career points, 128 assists, 61 threes. She has a chance to break a bunch of records and keep climbing up the all-time list if she's able to win tonight. But there's more than that at stake. Obviously, a trip to the Final Four is at stake. Chinea Igumbuke and Andrea Carter good enough to get up with us early this morning in advance of maybe the most anticipated night we've seen in women's college basketball in a very long time, if not ever. And Andrea, I want to start with you because when we talked last week, you didn't sound incredibly confident in Iowa even getting to this night. Now that they look as good as they did 2 days ago, how do you assess their chances of beating LSU tonight?
They have a chance, Greeny. I still have LSU winning the game, but let me tell you two things. We just showed that chart of the records that Caitlin can break. The assists and the threes are what you have to pay attention to in this matchup with LSU. I'm telling you, if Iowa wants a chance to win, Caitlin's shot chart, one, it has to be balanced. Shanae, you remember the game last season. Caitlin took 22 field goal attempts against LSU. 19 of them were threes. Caitlin's shot chart if it is layups and threes. If she's not settling for threes, Iowa's going to have a better chance. And then two, if she can get a double-double with points and assists, that means her teammates are getting buckets. I've said all season long, this Iowa team goes far with Caitlin. They go further when her teammates play with confidence. So look for her threes, shot chart to be balanced, and her assists numbers. She's got to find her teammates, and they've got to knock shots down with confidence.
What are you watching tonight, Janae?
Oh, I'm clearly watching Caitlin Clark's passing, just as Andrea said, because everyone in the world knows that Caitlin Clark leads nation in scoring, but she also does so in assists. And the crazy thing is Andrea, I love what you said about the balance in offense, because everyone knows that she accounted for 69% of Iowa's offense last time out. But the reason why that number is so high is because Iowa shot 53% from the field. That means her teammate, Sania Falter, was 6-for-6. Everyone was knocking down their shots. I love it when Iowa plays this way because that's their best version of basketball. But even more so, when you look at the shot chart, Drea, you mentioned it, she has to get to the rim because last game, I think she has a lot of confidence. She was 9-for-10 in the paint. Everyone wants to talk about the threes, but it's her ability to keep defenses honest, getting 18 paint points herself, Caitlin Clark.
Janae, there's about, by the way, Iowa's a very slim 1.5-point favorite last I saw in this one. So it's about dead even, and of course LSU is the defending national champion. You've got about as well-known a collection of players and personalities in this game as you could ever possibly have. But Caitlin Clark is the biggest of the stars. So Chiney, how would you describe, for folks who are getting set to watch tonight, what a win tonight would mean for her?
That would be a huge resume booster because everyone sees Iowa as the one seed, but really, in my opinion, they are the underdog. So if she's able to pull off this upset, I know Andrea has some more further takes to see what her resume will be, meaning if she wins a national championship, her resume is certified. But if they pull off this, in some ways, basketball fans say upset, the legend continues to grow. The only thing that she's missing, Drea, is a national championship, right?
That's my opinion too, Chiney. Like, the only reason this game is big because, yes, she's taking down the defending national champions. Yes, she'll have to have a phenomenal game to do it. So just know, if Iowa wins, it's because Caitlin played lights out. However, the only reason it's really a resume builder to me is because it gives her a chance to win a national championship. That's the only thing Caitlin is missing from this illustrious college basketball resume is the national championship. So a win tonight gets her one step closer to that ultimate goal.
All right, guys, stay close by. We'll have much more on this as we go. It's about as anticipated a night as you could ever possibly have. And we've got the games on ESPN and the ESPN app. You will see Angel Reese and LSU. You will see Caitlin Clark and Iowa. That's the first game, 7 o'clock Eastern, followed by Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins, UConn and USC. All the action coming your way tonight on ESPN. Meanwhile, as we continue, Rodgers and the Jets made another move over the weekend. Is it enough for them to soar to the top of the AFC? Dan Orlovsky will weigh in next. Plus, LeBron went scorched earth last night in Brooklyn. But it was what he said after the game that really caught our attention. You will hear it right after this. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meet nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Get Up is presented by ESPN Bet, the official sportsbook of ESPN. And as I bring my football crew in today, Dan Orlovsky, Dan Graziano, and the big fella Damian Woody. D, what I want you to feast your eyes on a little eye candy yesterday. This is from the UFL. This is the punter, Brad Wing. He's throwing the ball to the center, Alex Millett. He gets behind the defense, and the big fella rumbles in for a touchdown. What do you think of this, big fella?
Fat guys always do it better, Greeny. We always do it better, man. We're literally the best athletes on the field, man. That right there tells you everything.
He knows. I want you to hear him. He actually echoes that thought. Listen to Alex Millett being interviewed after the play.
I was just more of a decoy, but, you know, stuff hit the fan, and I was there. So, but it was I love it for fat guys.
And that's what I'm talking about. First of all, the restraint and not using the profanity was great. That's number one. But just look at the athleticism. Dan, you know, you see what time it is.
Yeah, it would. Listen.
Come on now.
I think you're making the look at the athleticism to be a little bit bigger than it has. Me ran straight, caught a ball.
You know what, Dan? I'm not with all your hating at, you know.
Hey.
This early in the morning. Stop hating on his fat guys.
He's just hating on a curve. That's all he's doing.
That's correct. All right. Let me stay with you, D. Wood. Let's play a Monday morning edition of Would You Believe with a bunch of news around the NFL. It starts in Dallas. Our Jeremy Fowler is reporting the Cowboys and Zeke Elliott have mutual interest. Would you believe that Zeke would boost the Cowboys' red zone offense?
No, I don't believe that. Listen, I think that Zeke Elliott is more of a complimentary piece. At this stage in his career, he's been, you know, obviously one of the all-time greats for the, you know, Dallas Cowboys during his day. But right now, I don't see Zeke as a guy that coming in and just going to give this huge boost. Dallas Cowboys, trust me, the red zone wasn't a problem for the Dallas Cowboys, you know, at all last season. So, no, I don't agree with that.
Next stop is Chicago. Would you believe the Bears and the number one pick are going to make the playoffs next season?
Oh, man, it's tough. I don't believe that, but I think this Bears team is going to be, they're going to make some noise next year with all the pieces that Ryan Poles, the GM, has added with the Chicago Bears. We know they're going to draft the quarterback number one, so I don't think they're going to get into postseason, but they're going to be a very scary team next year.
Yeah, what you're looking at are the Lions and the Packers, and that's what's in their way in their own division. But we'll see if Caleb Williams is the guy to lead them. And then finally, D-Wood, would you believe the Jets are going to win the AFC East?
Listen, I preface this by the word health. If they are healthy, yes, the Jets could absolutely win the AFC East next year. You have one of the all-time great quarterbacks in Aaron Rodgers coming back off the Achilles. I know he's old. Dan, chill. I know. Look at Groz. Look at me.
Great.
But look, all the moves that the Jets have made, the Jets are all in this year with all the moves that they made. They are one of the most talented teams in the not only in the AFC, but just in the National Football League.
Yeah, with all the March Madness going on this weekend and the start of baseball, lest you missed it, the Jets made another huge move on Friday with the acquisition of Haason Reddick, giving up a conditional third. 2 years from now, it could become a second if he's, you know, like the best defensive player in the world, which I'm counting on him to be.
Right.
So let me bring in the haters here, Dan Orlovsky and Dan Graziano. Orlovsky, I mean, describe for me this Jets offseason. Look, I was all ready to give up, and now they have drawn me back in with an offseason that belongs in the Louvre. Talk to me about the Jets offseason so far, Orlovsky.
Yeah, before that, shout out to the basketball capital of the world, UConn. Danny Hurley getting to another Final Four. Go for the girls tonight. Hey, best basketball program in the country before I get into that, okay?
Okay, fair enough.
Jets. Yep. Right now, the Jets have the third best roster on paper in the conference. I would put it behind Kansas City, and I would put it behind Baltimore. Other teams in that conference have holes. The Jets just have ifs, and the ifs are all attached to health. If Tyron Smith, if Mike Williams, if Aaron Rodgers are healthy, this team could absolutely be in the AFC Championship game. There's two truths that have to be answered, Greeny, and there are questions. One, the last time that we saw Aaron Rodgers throw really like a meaningful pass, one that had weight to it in the NFL, by the time this season starts, is going to be 20 months.
Yeah.
It'll be January 9th of 2023. It was an interception.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so it's going to be two and a half years since he won MVP. We don't know what it's going to look like for Rodgers. Yes, he's Hall of Fame, all that. So, like, it's 2.5 years since he won MVP. 18 to 20 months since he last played his meaningful snap in the NFL. I think that's the, if not the biggest question of the NFL season, is who and what is Aaron Rodgers?
And who and what are around him, and they have done. You and I were talking about it this morning. They've done it exactly right.
This is their offseason has been a perfect one for them, because the Aaron Rodgers move of last year means they are all in to win a championship for however long he is there. So you take big swings, right? You lose Bryce Huff, you replace him with a more expensive Hassan Reddick in a trade. You sign Tyron Smith knowing that, yeah, he might miss some games, probably will, but when he's on the field, he's going to be a dominant player at left tackle, which is what you need. You sign Mike Williams knowing what he can do for your passing game, knowing the risk that comes with that. They're not in this to go 10-7 and lose in the first round.
No, right.
Like you're either going to win the whole thing, or, you know, it doesn't really matter. Like, you can bottom out like they did last year. So I think their offseason has been exactly the one they should have had for their circumstance.
Yeah, they pushed all their chips in, man. Like you look at it, like you look at the move. The only question mark I have is health.
Right, of course.
For anyone out there, that's the only thing you can question about the Jets and the moves that they made. Health. As far as the actual acquisitions, they've been on the money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've been absolutely on the money. And we're not even talking about the players that they already have on the roster.
Right.
Like, look at these moves. Like, Tyron Taylor, Tyron Smith, when he's healthy, he's one of the best left tackles in the league. Morgan Moses, he was excellent when he was with the with the Jets before he left to go to Baltimore. Mike Williams, big threat, going to be a complimentary piece to Garrett Wilson. Hassan Reddick, 4 straight years of double-digit sacks.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, these are big-time moves. Big-time moves. And quite honestly, for me, I don't need Aaron Rodgers to be MVP Aaron Rodgers. Not when I got Breece Hall
the
in the backfield.
The heck you don't.
Yeah.
Not when I got Breece Hall in the
you
backfield.
You absolutely need that.
Go ahead.
If you are going
I got 30
to
seconds.
Be,
go.
If the Jets are going to have this payoff, they need MVP Aaron Rodgers. Again, it's been 2.5 years, essentially, by the time the season starts, till he's won MVP. Would they are not beating Kansas City. They are not beating Baltimore. They are not beating Houston. They are not going to beat some of these upper echelon teams when it matters the most, unless Aaron is playing at an MVP level.
But the defense, they got a great defense.
I disagree with
Jets
that.
Jets should have a dominant defense.
So does Kansas City. So does Baltimore.
We'll see. I mean, the Jets almost beat Kansas City last year with Zach Wilson on a Sunday night, if not for some questionable officiating. We'll see. They've drawn me back in. I'm in. I was just when I was ready to give up, I'm back in. In the meantime, oh, LeBron, did you see what he did last night? Holy smoke. If you didn't, you aren't going to believe it. And then you need to hear what he said after the game, all that and more on the way. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Bottom of the hour, you are watching Get Up. We are presented by ESPN Bet. And it was a good bet that LeBron James was going to put on a show as the Lakers were here in New York to take on the Nets in Brooklyn. Jay Will and Tim Legler are here. And it was a LeBron show from the very beginning.
Yeah, he comes out some nights and he just has such an aggressive mindset. When he scores early in the game, you feel like you know you're going to get a steady dose of it the entire night.
Yeah, you see the bucket, then the pass. The Lakers started out on a 17-0 run. It was 17-0 Lakers. And then Jay Will, it would continue. LeBron, 9 threes in this game, a career high.
I mean, there's only two players in Lakers history who have shot 90% from the three-point line, 9 of 10, him and Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, spectacular. The Lakers continuing to lead pretty much the entire night. LeBron, again, just feeling it when he's knocking down shots like these legs. Even at his age, he's unstoppable.
And this is the highest shooting year of his career from the three-point line, and he feels more comfortable getting into these shots off the dribble than he has at any point in his career, which is pretty amazing.
And Greeny, watch every highlight. He looks LeBron tells when he's going to shoot a three.
Yeah.
He looks down at the ground. It's his two-tailed thing when he shoots.
Well, he scored 40 points last night on the 9 threes, his second 40-point game since turning 39 years old. He joins Michael Jordan as the only players in history with multiple 40-point games at age 39 or older. And then afterwards, he was asked how much longer he sees himself going.
Not very long. Not very long. I'm on the other side, obviously at a hill, so I'm not going to play another 21 years. That's for damn sure. But not very long. I don't know when that door will close as far as when I'll retire, but I don't have much time left.
I don't know that I understand the context of the question. Again, I wasn't in the room.
Yeah.
I mean, LeBron, you're 39. Your team is sort of making a playoff run here. You're looking pretty good. You just scored 40 points. How soon are you retiring?
Yeah,
there
has
to have been a reason why the question was asked.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're not making a big deal of the fact that he said that last night.
No, of course
not.
He actually, you could tell, he was irritated by getting asked that in that moment.
Right.
I'm trying to get this team ready for some sort of a playoff run. You know, if we can survive the play-in and get on to a series. That's where I'm at, and I just had a great game. Why are you asking me about that? So, no, I agree. He was irritated.
Yeah. So let's put that one aside for a moment and just talk about LeBron James at 39 continuing to do things that no one his age has ever done, and one of those could be leading this team that's starting to look. I know that we try and make a big deal out of every win and every little moment, but as we go into this month where the playoffs will begin, the Lakers do look like a team that, if everything went their way, could catch a little fire.
I mean, what it got to the Western Conference Finals last year. I mean, look, here's the thing. If you have LeBron James playing at a high level, you have Anthony Davis, who is facing anybody other than the Joker, frankly, in my opinion. I think that's a really good combination with their size, their frame, the way they defend. Now, they don't put themselves in the best polling position legs here, obviously, because of how they not having somebody to carry the load throughout the regular season. But they could cause trouble in the playoffs because they have the size, they have the talent, and they have the physicality.
Look, I said, I don't know how long ago it was, the Lakers weren't going to do something like they did last year. They couldn't replicate that run because of the landmines that are in the Western Conference. It's just different. But at the time I said that, Phoenix didn't look like this. The Clippers didn't look like this, 500 for a six-week stretch. Carl Anthony Towns wasn't hurt. Like, there's a lot of things that have happened in the meantime that now you look at the Lakers and say, if they get a particular matchup in the first round, and by that I mean really avoid Denver. That's really what it comes to. If you can avoid Denver in a seven-game series to start off, assuming they escape the play-in, I think a lot of people would pick the Lakers to beat either Oklahoma City or Minnesota if they get one of those two teams in a seven-game series.
And so it may become a very interesting little run here for LeBron and company. They had a good one last night in Brooklyn. Let me run the floor through some of the other better moments from the NBA yesterday, because there's a bunch of them out there. Legs, let's start with your guy and your team, the Nuggets and the Joker. He had 26 points, 18 rebounds, 16 assists. Just let that sink in a moment. Man. They blow out the Cavs. Who's the biggest threat to them in the West?
I think it's the Dallas Mavericks. And you know, I've been on this pretty hard since the trading deadline, and they're doing nothing to make me think otherwise. Particularly when you look at the one thing Dallas was not doing consistently was defending. Well, look at what they have done defensively during this stretch. They've won 11 out of 12 games, and they faced a team last night that had won 11 straight.
Yep.
In their building. And Luka Doncic came out with such a dialed-in focus at the start of this game, he completely took the game over in the first quarter, and it stayed that way the rest of the night. So the combination of the greatness of Luka with Kyrie as a supplemental scoring star, the athletes that they have now, and then now they're actually defending at that level on a given night, I think Dallas is the biggest threat. Again, avoid the Nuggets at all costs early if you can.
Agreed. Right.
But I think, why wouldn't you think Dallas is poised to be that team that could be the last one standing against the Nuggets?
I would actually say, first off, Nikola Jokic is my MVP.
Right.
I know SGA, other players are in that category, but he is the bona fide MVP in my opinion. And I would agree with you, Legs, on the Mavericks. It feels like Luka and Kyrie are having fun when they play together. It's not, oh, Legs, you go. Now it's my turn to go. Now you go. It feels like there's fluidity and continuity in how they're playing offensively. It's a very dynamic backcourt.
Yeah. You said that you think this is the best team that Luka has had since he's been in Dallas, and that includes the team that made the conference final.
No question about it. And that team had Jalen Brunson. I get it. They had Spencer Dinwiddie. Those two guys were huge for them. This is the best team because he's got Kyrie, a bona fide superstar scorer next to him. It's the supplemental pieces and the way that they fit together. By the way, we just watched that highlight about five times while we were talking. Can we please show that shot one more time?
Yeah.
That's the most absurd shot I have seen. Certainly this year, one of the most absurd shots in my career.
Here it comes.
Step through scoop shot from 22 feet. And then just this reaction, man. What are you going to do? You know how irritating that is to your opponent when not only you do this, and then you just laugh all the way down the court. Like, oh, this is so fun out here, isn't it, guys? Maybe not for Jabari Smith.
It's just different. I said it before. I think we're finally seeing everybody wanted results in year one. And it takes a while to learn how to play with two guys who are primary ball handlers. And now I think with the continuity and the pieces, like Leg said, this team is one of the most dangerous teams there is in the Western Conference. I'm also not going to just overlook Minnesota as well.
Right.
I know not having Karl Anthony Towns, but defensively, the way they are built, they're some dogs too now.
I'm just thinking about the trade deadline last year. Kyrie goes out to play with Luka, and we all thought, oh, what a disaster. They didn't even want to make the playoffs. Durant goes to play with Devin Booker, and we're thinking, oh, they're a year away from being a championship contender, and boy, how quickly that feels like it has switched. Let's stay here in New York, Jay. The Knicks and the Thunder play an unbelievable game last night. Thunder wind up winning late, SGA with a big shot. Knicks lose another heartbreaker and nail biter. And then there's that bad mojo, or not mojo, but just sort of bad comments about the possibility of getting back some of their injured stars. How concerned, if you're a fan of the Knicks who have had such a good season, how concerned should you be?
I am concerned for the Knicks. First off, I think other bona fide superstars in the league get that call that Jalen Brunson didn't get the hip check call on Luke Dirk. I think he should have gotten that call. Mm-hmm. I also think that down the stretch, not having Mitchell Robinson, not having Julius Randle, not having some of their front court players is a major. OG Anunoby, like last night, that would have been a matchup for Shai Gilgeous, right? Having OG on that floor would have made a world of a difference. The fact when I hear Thibodeau talk that of uncertainty and not knowing when those guys are coming back, considering the way their last nine games are against playing caliber teams, I am concerned for them down the stretch.
I'm very concerned about where else is it going to come from besides Brunson in a big spot. And this is where Julius Randle comes into it, because you look at the rest of their pieces, and I loved all the guys they added, but it's built around the two stars, and they only have one right now. Brunson's sensational, and look, there's going to be nights he will be able to carry you all the way through in the fourth quarter, but that's asking an awful lot for one guy that's a smaller guard playing that lead position to do that night in and night out without the secondary star next to you. They've got some streaky offensive players that on a given night can do it, but at not being at full strength, you can't look at them as the same threat that they were. And even last night, Thibodeau had to go to four guards and Precious Achiuwa for a stretch of that game because you don't have Mitchell Robinson. You have don't have Julius Randle. You have no size available besides Hartenstein.
Yeah, and the other night, Brunson had 61 points and they lost a game. So I mean, it's a lot on his shoulders. We'll see what they can do. And then one more from last night. Legs, Draymond Green, we spent all last week talking about him. He had 21 points, 11 assists, 6 rebounds as the Warriors beat the Spurs. So what do we say about
them? What was the score, Greeny? You know what the score was?
I mean, you tell me. What do you mean what
I'm
the score was?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, they were up. What's the point that you're making with that?
I just want
they
to make sure that with all due respect to the Spurs, like, it's a good number. Like, I want to see that consistently.
Okay, fair enough.
You need to see that those point spreads consistently against a team that's not at the bottom tier of the Western Conference.
So I mean, okay, I'm trying to figure out the point that you're making for me. You're just sort of dismissing that? Like, we spent all last week saying, oh, my God, they're done. He's dead. They should get rid of him, nothing else. Boom, he comes back. He plays a really good game. Like, what do we say about Draymond Green this morning?
I'm saying it's against the Spurs.
Okay.
Like, I'm saying, look, those are numbers that you should be doing against the Spurs. I'll tell you my raw opinion on it. Like, I don't know how you feel about it. I know Steph had a really big game. They beat the Spurs barely. It's the Spurs.
Listen, Draymond Green, no one is saying that Draymond Green is not capable of having games like this.
Right.
The reason that, you know, we went in on him as hard as we did last week was because they need him on the floor to be that. And he basically left the game after 4 minutes and left Steph Curry out there to dry in a game that they had to win. This was a huge night last night. Okay, not only do they get this win, Houston loses. That losing streak is snapped. You get a little bit more comfort zone there. So now it looks most likely that Golden State will survive that, that run by Houston, and they're going to get into this play-in. In a one-night situation with Steph Curry, and certainly Draymond Green's going to play a big part in that, Golden State Warriors are dangerous in a one-night situation. But if they have to win two games to get out of the play-in against those other two teams, who that looks like that's going to be, I still think it's very unlikely. So it's great that Draymond atoned, okay? He played well and he atoned for that. Ultimately, is this going to be a needle mover for the Warriors, what happened last night in terms of a postseason run? I don't think so.
I guess my bigger point, Greeny, was I don't walk away from last night saying, okay, all the Warriors' issues are fixed.
No.
Right.
By the way, and that's the way that came across. It's like, well, he had this great game. Okay, everything's fine. Everything doesn't still feel fine to me. Like said, obviously it puts you in polling position, but still I think it's a major uphill battle for this team.
So I mean, as we felt a year ago, the Lakers have a much better shot. If we're just looking at the two transcendent stars, the Lakers feel like they have a much better shot to keep this thing going into May than the Warriors do at this point. Meanwhile, the best team in the league has been the Celtics, and we will see them on Wednesday night hosting the Thunder. That's 7:30 Eastern here on ESPN. Then the Cavs in Phoenix to take on KD and the Suns. Coverage begins with NBA Countdown at 7 Eastern. Coming up, it is draft month in the NFL. Let's do this thing, people. We've got the five biggest questions that will be answered by the time we touch the calendar again. You'll hear them next. And then speaking of answering questions, no one does that better than Dan Graziano. Here's today's. By yardage, Dan, who is the NFL's all-time leading passer among quarterbacks who were drafted in the fourth round? We'll find out if you do next. You're watching Get Up. We are presented by ESPN Bet. It's generally smart to bet on Graziano in this matchup with Hembo, but it's a tough one today.
It is.
By yardage,
yeah.
Who is the NFL's all-time leading passer among quarterbacks drafted in the fourth round?
I couldn't figure out what this had to do with anything, but I guess we're probably talking Dak Prescott and the Cowboys at some point, so that he might be trying to lead me there. I'm not going there, though. I'm going with Kirk Cousins.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Kirk Cousins is correct. Woo. Followed by Sonny Jurgensen.
Obviously.
Followed by Dak Prescott, Rich Gannon, and Joe Theismann.
Nice. That's a heavy Washington presence there.
Another nice
Cousins,
win.
Cousins, Jurgensen, and Theismann.
And Cousins now down in Atlanta. We will see. Can we put the scoreboard up there? Hembo really thought he had one today. 17-9 is the current count, so it's a touchdown and a two-point conversion is the advantage for Graziano. And, of course, it is officially April, so that means we are in the month of the NFL draft. There is so much to happen between now and 3 weeks from Thursday when we all gather in Detroit So I'm going to give you right now the five biggest questions. We will start going through the answers as we go. But this, to me, my green list today, these are the five biggest questions that will be figured out. At number five, I'm going to put the wide receivers. And Marvin Harrison Jr. has been penciled in as the best wide receiver in this class, it feels like, for years. But I'm getting a lot of sense that there are teams out there that think Malik Nabers is actually the better prospect. His pro day knocked everybody on their socks. He's spectacular. So, by the way, is Rome Odunze from Washington. But I think there is some chance that Malik Nabers winds up being WR1 in this draft class, which would be a huge surprise. Speaking of huge surprises, at number four, is there any chance Jaden Daniels supplants Caleb Williams as QB1? I will remind you, this is really only one person's decision to make, and there is no indication to this point that Ryan Poles has changed his mind. I still think it is likeliest that Caleb Williams goes number one, but there are so many people who prefer Jaden Daniels. I'll be curious to see if somehow that switches at the top. Speaking of which, question number three, does J.J. McCarthy move into the top three quarterbacks? It feels like there have been the three guys at the top, Caleb and Jaden Daniels and Drake May, and then J.J. McCarthy on the outside. But he has been rising so fast. Is it possible that he actually tips into the top three, maybe supplanting Drake May, and goes higher in this draft than we ever would have imagined? We'll wait and see. Then the big question that I have for you at number two, are we going to have four quarterbacks in round one? Are we going to have five quarterbacks in round one? Are we going to have six quarterbacks in round one? Images of 1983 go through your head with Marino going at the very end. Does Michael Penix wind up in round one? Is Bo Nix a certainty to go in round one? I think we are short of having four, probably five, and I think it's a possibility that we wind up with six because teams will make trades, and that's the number one question. Which team or teams are going to make the trades up for a quarterback? Is someone coming up to get Jaden Daniels? Is someone coming up to get J.J. McCarthy? Of maybe later consequence, is someone going to trade into the back end of that first round to get Michael Penix? Is there a surprise quarterback team out there? Let me bring the crew in here with Orlovsky and Damian Woody, but I will start with you, Dan Graziano.
What?
As my insider extraordinaire, okay, on that thought. If we are looking for the teams right now that who might be looking to trade up, and Jaden Daniels is the hottest commodity I can imagine, which are the teams we have our closest eyes on?
Minnesota and Las Vegas are the two that are down the round a little bit. Minnesota's already traded for another first-round pick, so they're ready to go if the opportunity presents itself. You can say the Giants at six. I think they may have their eye on McCarthy. Do they need to come up from six to get him? Maybe, maybe not. But if you're talking about teams that need to make a big move up if they want to get the guy they want, I'm looking at the Raiders and I'm looking at the Vikings.
The Raiders move would be a big move, right? We're talking about they're coming from much later in the round.
Yes, it's tough. I mean, like, it might be impossible for them to go up, but I know that they're interested.
Orlovsky, who should be doing this? Who should be not hanging up the phone, as our buddy Mike T would say, until they have a deal done?
Yeah, certainly Minnesota and the Raiders. I completely agree with Graz. The really interesting part is, with Minnesota, who's the guy that they want, and is it going up to Washington?
Right.
And is Washington dead set on not going back? You know, is Washington committed to saying, we're going to take whatever quarterback we want at number two, or does Washington sit back with Cliff Kingsbury as their new offensive coordinator who wants a little bit more of a point guard at quarterback and be like, you know what, we'll drop back and take a Bo Nix at number 11 or something like that? Does that allow Minnesota or the Las Vegas Raiders to go up? Greeny, the really interesting point that I think you made was the six quarterbacks in round one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be very clear. If Michael Penix from Washington did not have four season-ending injuries, we would be talking about five quarterbacks in the first five picks. We're talking about four in the first four picks. But if Penix didn't have those injuries, with the way that he threw the football the last 2 years at Washington, you would be talking about, man, are the New York Giants going to have to go up to the number five pick to go get Michael Penix, more so than do they have to sit and wait for J.J. McCarthy. Michael Penix is as talented a thrower of the football that we have in this draft class. And if he was healthy, we'd have five in the first five.
And he's a spectacular athlete. If he says his pro day, he is healthy now. That's the point.
Right.
He's fully healthy now and has been for 2 years. And he set the world. You're looking.
No. He is. And everything that's important for people to understand.
Yeah.
He has checked every box health-wise during the draft process. But teams are concerned because past injuries,
sure,
tend to predict future injuries in a lot of cases.
Let's go back then to the very top of this thing, though. Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, the Drake May versus J.J. McCarthy part of it all. How do you see it right now, Dee Wood?
I still have Jaden Daniels as my number one because I always say when it comes to these quarterbacks, everyone's athletic. Everyone has big arm, all that type of stuff. But who can do the ordinary things the best that's required in the National Football League? I think Jaden Daniels is the guy, to me, that game in and game out displayed that for me. So I have him as my number one quarterback.
See, it's a really interesting question. And Dan Orlovsky was the first person who said that on this show. And now a lot of people have said it. Lewis Riddick has fallen in love, too. It's an interesting question to me, Dan. If you're the Bears, it's a dicey game to play.
It is.
But if someone wants to come up to take the guy you wouldn't take anyway, then it sort of does behoove you to maybe move back a spot, but now you're running the risk of not getting your guy.
I don't think you move back a spot because the team picking second is the one that really wants Caleb Williams, right? Because he's the local kid. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to work if
that's
you're the
right.
Bears and you
that's
want
right.
Caleb.
So we would assume that Washington – so we assume they don't want Jaden Daniels first. That Washington would take Caleb if they had the first pick.
I believe that they would, yes.
You need to find a team that's willing to do it. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, so I think the conversation with Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, comes down to this for the Bears. The flaw of each player. Caleb holds the ball too long. Jaden did not play great versus pressure. Which one do you think is going to be more able to be overcome in the NFL? And that's the question. I've had Jaden one, Green, and you know that. I said this last week on McAfee's show, and it's gotten a ton of, I guess, pushback, whatever. And I said, if I were the Chicago Bears and Ryan Poles, I would watch that Caleb Williams USC game versus Notre Dame, and it would give me a lot of pause because that was the most NFL-like defense when it comes to defensive fronts and pressures and coverage rotations that Caleb Williams saw in his college career. And he played poorly, very poorly. And that would be the one game that I sit there and I go, all right, is this what it's going to look like more often than not? Bailing from the pocket, interceptions. And everyone's like, you can't pay attention to one game and put it at the top. But we did that with C.J. Stroud in Georgia. So why do we probably should have paid more attention to C.J. Stroud's performance against Georgia. And I've said that with the Bears. That would be the game if I was Ryan Poles sitting there going, that one makes me pause.
The questions abound. The answers are 3.5 weeks away at latest from coming, but we have an eye on all these trades. Some of them probably do take place before the draft. Meanwhile, tonight, all eyes will be on the college basketball. The must-see matchup of recent memory. It's Caitlin Clark against Angel Reese. It's the superstar against the defending champs. It's the rematch, and we'll get you set next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much up.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.